Thank you for listening to the audio archives. She Knows Media presents Blogger 15, Experts Among Us. The following session is entitled, You as a Brand, Breaking Free to Build a More Authentic, Meaningful Personal Brand, and features speakers Nancy Davis Coe, David Leet, Kat Kinsman, Heather Barmore, and Annie from Ethical Thinker. For more information, please visit blogher.com.
All right, everyone. I know it's confusing, but I'm not Gwyneth Paltrow, so you've left that session. You've broken new ground, and I'm hopeful. We just had them turn the lights up a little bit, so if you're digesting your lunch, so, and you need to nod off for a second, that's fine, but you know, come back and rejoin us. My name is Nancy Davis Coe, and the panel that you are at is Breaking Free, You as a Brand, Breaking Free to Build a More Authentic, Meaningful Personal Brand. So if that's not what you think you're at, you feel free to get up and leave. And as with any of the sessions in Blogher, if you're not learning something, no offense taken. If you decide you want to check out something else, that's totally fine. Just a couple of housekeeping tips. I'm going to introduce our panel in a moment. I've got a lot of questions for them, but we will take breaks during the panel to get your questions. The session's being recorded, so please don't ask your question until the mic wrangler over here, Bobita, thank you, comes to you. So just hold that thought until you've got a microphone in front of you. If you are tweeting, please use the hashtag BlogHer15 to share your thoughts on the session. We would love that. And I also want to encourage you to check out the app where you'll have the in-depth speaker bios, because I'm just going to give you a real brief introduction, and then we're going to get right into the idea of not just your personal brand, but how you can use it to create a more authentic, meaningful online presence. So let me quickly run down our panel members. The first is David Leet, which rhymes with eat, which is prescient because he's a food writer, among other things. David is the publisher of Leet's Culinaria, which was founded in 1999 with a mission to educate and entertain cooks and readers of all levels who are interested in the diverse world of food. But he writes a blog, which he spells B-L-A-H-G, which I assume is either from Boston, or is that just...
It's basically meant to be ironic.
The blog. And his blog goes well beyond the plate, so looking forward to hearing from David. Next to David is Kat Kinsman, who is the editor-in-chief of Tasting Table, who has the most on-fleek bun of the conference. So, Tasting Table is a website and newsletter for culinary enthusiasts, and her quote is the one that I think kind of summarizes what we're trying to do today. Your brand is you, but you are not your brand. It's a subtle distinction, but there's a huge difference. Kat, you're going to explain to us what that is. Next to Kat, we have Heather Barmore from heatherbarmore.com and her blog, Nopasanada. I knew I was going to mispronounce that because I thought about it too much. Heather is a recovering lobbyist blogger, freelance writer, and a lady who lunches. So she writes about a lot of different areas, and I think when we were talking about the breadth of a personal brand, Heather's going to bring a lot to that discussion. And finally, at the end of the table, we have Annie from Ethical Thinker. Annie's site now is about asking about how we can improve the way we relate to each other and to the earth we inhabit. It is about questioning things, proposing solutions, and testing ideas. You may remember Annie from her wildly successful blog, PhD in Parenting, from which she walked away recently. So that's an interesting story. And I found out in the Hilton Bar last night, she speaks sehr gut Deutsch. So I'm going to start by asking the panel to answer this question. What is personal brand to you? How do you define it? And then if you can introduce yourself by giving three attributes that define your personal brand. And I did give you a heads up, so don't look like you didn't know I was going to ask that question. All right.
But you assume my root. Is this on? I don't know if it's on. Doesn't sound like it's on. Okay. All right. Well, that assumes that I read my email, which I don't usually do anymore. Personal brand for me is where you originated, what you're about. It's that indefinable thing that is you, that is inseparable. You can't take it out. Cat is not me, I am not Cat, it's impossible. And to me, that's a personal brand. And from that seed, everything about your brand will sprout. And so that to me is a personal brand. Now, three attributes about my personal brand. I think humorous, authentic, and can I think about it?
Yeah.
Okay. Did not do my homework.
Yeah, I missed that one too somehow. But to me, personal brand starts with a question that, you know, as an editor, I always ask writers, what is the story that only you can tell? Now that turns into a brand when you consider the next step of that. What is the conversation that you want to have with other people? Having a brand is a generous thing because it's the thing about you know, being a brand versus, you know, I forget how I said that, but your brand is you, but you are not your brand. It's separating yourself from, I think the example I had given in a piece I wrote right before Blog Her was the difference between going up to somebody at a conference and saying, hi, I'm, you know, the cranky cross stitcher, versus, hi, I am your name, and I write as the cranky cross stitcher. It's, you know, it comes from a really genuine place, and it's the difference between saying, hi, I'm marketing something at you, and, you know, hi, I'm here to have this conversation with you, and that would be a really great thing. So I think for my brand, I hope warm would be part of it. You know, I'm trying to think of the words that other people have used at me, so I'm going to go with weird, or which used to be screamed out of me through car windows, and vulnerable.
Hi. So actually, I read the email. And so I have notes.
Yes.
Good for you.
Like, I have notes, and I'm like, oh, it's like studying for a test. And I'm normally not like this. My name is Heather Barmore, as was already mentioned. And okay, so what I've always heard about personal brand is it's whatever people say about you when you're not in the room, and then it's like, oh, I don't want to know what people say about me when I'm not in the room. Trust me, it's terrible. That said, it's whatever people think about you, the first thought that comes to mind when someone's thinking about you, the good thing that comes to mind when people are thinking about you or speaking about you. And actually recently had some of my Facebook friends and some readers, I asked them, I was like, okay, so what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of me? And I was like, okay, this could be either a really, really great idea, or it could be terrible and I could just go home crying. And there was one thing that somebody said that I was like, oh, that's not good. But everybody else, so the top three were yoga. I'm a huge, I'm really into Bikram yoga. The second thing was some iteration of politics, Congress, and C-SPAN, because those are like, C-SPAN's my favorite thing. And then the third thing was, wine. That was the third thing, is that, seriously, it might be a little bit of both. But also, those are things I am really, really into, and I talk about them, and strangely enough, it's what people are thinking when they think of me. I mean, last summer at Blog Her, I happened to host a yoga and sangria party because someone was like, Heather likes wine, Heather likes yoga, and so I was like, sure, I'll do that. So it's, these are good things to think about, and then there was the one bad thing, which I won't mention.
Hi, so yeah, I guess for me, personal brand, it's maybe a little bit similar to some of what Heather said. I really do think that the personal brand is how other people see you at the end of the day, and I think that you do have a role in shaping that, certainly through what it is that you're doing every single day on your blogs, on social media. That's going to shape what it is that people think about you, but you can also try to frame it a little bit, and when I think back to my old blog on PhD in Parenting, right in the header, for example, I said, parenting Manifesting Feminism Social Change. That was what I wrote about. I tried to make that clear. I would put it in my Twitter bio. I put it in my header. I put it everywhere to tell people that's the scope of what I do. That's who I am. That's what I'm trying to put out there and to be about. So you can certainly shape it, but at the end of the day, it really does come back to what it is that other people are thinking about you. In terms of my own personal brand now and my three things is, I guess, what I'd like to be thought of as is someone who asks questions, who's a critical thinker, and who's outspoken.
Can we get the mics on the dais to...
I think they are on.
No, they are. Great.
Are they? Yeah. They can hear
that
me
works.
Now.
Excellent. So, and I should have introduced myself. I'm Nancy Davis Coe. My blog is Midlife Mixtape, and my tagline kind of sums up my three attributes, I think. It's for the years between being hip and breaking one. So I'm about music, humor, and I can't think of the third one now. Oh, aging. That's it. That's because I'm getting old. So just really quickly, I want to maybe dispel this notion. Sometimes when people talk about personal brand, I think there's an ew factor, like, oh, God, we're life casting now. It's the Gary Steingart book. You know, it's... What do you have to say about people that say that's very calculated to have a personal brand or, you know, to kind of take that commercial approach to your personal life? How would you address that?
Well, for me, I think that it's all about where you start. I think it's ooh and gross when you start externally and then go in internally saying, okay, I want to be X, Y, and Z, so therefore I'm going to do A, B, C in order for people to see me as C, F, G, H, whatever it is, and whatever that formula is. So therefore, it's calculated. But if you are starting from the inside out and you start with where your passion is and what you believe in and how you see the world, then that starts going inside to out. And that's where you'll start creating your brand just by being who you are. So I've never had that issue of I'm a personal brand. I don't even think of myself as a brand. I just sort of see myself as trying to tell the stories of my life and what happens to me. And if it happens to, you know, kind of stick to you, like a nettle sticks to you or something like that, then that's wonderful. And if it doesn't, that's okay. You can go on. There's a lot of other blogs. And so I don't really see it as being calculated. I see it just as being yourself.
That was the answer I was hoping for.
Oh, good. See, I read the email.
That's the correct answer.
So for any of you, was there an aha moment where you decided you needed to be a little bit more deliberate about your brand instead of just sort of letting things unfurl? And if so, can you share that story?
Yeah, I definitely have a story about this because I operate in a couple of different worlds. A lot of people just know me as a food writer and food editor. The other half of that is that I have a lot of very, you know, personal public conversations about mental health and about women's issues. So before I was at Tasting Table, I was at CNN as the food editor of a blog called Eatocracy. And there were just some empty spaces in the living calendar, and we were talking about appearance and body image for a month, and something in me said, oh, I guess I'll step up and write about what it's like to have a big nose. And, you know, probe, and there wasn't a lot of time to do it, so I had to sit down and work with an editor who I'd never worked with before, who for some reason just assumed that this is what I did, and wrote something very, very quickly, put it up in, you know, a giant forum. People read CNN.com. And the way that people responded to that absolutely shocked me, because people were writing to me and saying this should be printed out and given to every teenage girl. And, you know, oh God, you know, I went through that too, and here's where I came from. And I realized, my God, I have something to say that people will actually pay attention to. So I started diving into more of the stories that were kind of painful to tell. But the more I gave of myself, I saw people lighting up and saying, oh my God, me too. And these evolved to the point of my writing some very personal essays about depression and anxiety. And I have a book coming out next year called Hi, Anxiety, because we realized that the question, that the topic was so personal to so many people, and the fact that somebody was going out and talking about it in a completely empathetic and non-judgmental way, just seeing it talked about in public was a really huge thing. And as those essays were being published, I thought, it's my responsibility to talk back to people and let them know that they're not alone, because by God, I wish I'd had that too. So
the worlds have somehow coexisted and occasionally cross over.
A lot of my friends, I've been blogging for almost 10 years, and a lot of my friends happen to be parent bloggers. And so because I was really good friends with this whole group of parent bloggers, it was naturally like I wanted to kind of do what they were doing, except, you know, not have a child. My friends are doing all this stuff, and then they brought me into the fold, and then I kind of started doing some of the same, like, writing for a couple of the same sites that they were writing for. Like, I was writing for a parenting site for a very long time, and writing about not having children. And I was like, what am I doing? I'm not going to have a child anytime soon. I don't really want a child right this second. You know, why am I trying to pretend that, you know, I'm on that level? And so it was like a come to Jesus moment where I was like, all right, I need to step back. And it was about 9 months of me like being like, oh, I'm not going to really write that much. I left the country even. And then I realized, okay, this is what my new focus is going to be. It wasn't really a new focus. It was just that there were a lot of things going on in this country that I was really, really upset about. And so I started writing about them. And that turned out to be a lot better for me. And so now I'm a far better, you know, writer in terms of writing it for other outlets rather than a personal blogger. But it took about seven or eight years for me to come to that decision.
And what are the benefits that you guys have attained from having that clearly defined personal brand? And maybe it's not that clearly defined or not that so deliberate, but I think people know who you are and what you stand for. So even if you don't have three words, you're still a brand. So what's the benefit to having that?
For me, this is still on. It's hard to hear. For me, I think it gives people a place to start. People love to compartmentalize. So, okay, he's a food blogger. She writes about women's issues, write about gay issues, whatever it is. I think it's a place to start. I think it's also that becomes a cubbyhole, and it also becomes something that just confines you. And I don't like being confined. Mm-hmm. But I was happy for a very long time writing about food because I was like, this was an opportunity. I started out in the print world, so I was writing for Bon Appetit and Gourmet and Food and Wine and the New York Times about food, and I was very happy about that. But then, you know, I realized something that happened to me was I became very bored with food. You wouldn't know it to look at me, but I became bored with food because there was only so many stories I could tell through the lens of food. So very much like Kat and some of the other panelists here, I decided to take a chance. And last year, I think in March, I wrote a blog post about being bipolar. And there was a little bit of a food angle in there, but being a child who had bipolar and how terrible that was. And I held my breath because the year before, or 2 years before, on Julia Child's 100th birthday, I was going to do that. My husband said, you are making a huge mistake. You are going to lose so many of your followers because they don't want someone who's crazy talking to them about food. And I said, I think they do. I think they do. They want crazy people. And they really do. And so I did it, and the response was so outrageously positive, very much like Kat. I got people, I'm going to get through this without crying too, got a lot of people writing me saying, thank you for doing this. My husband actually is now finally going in to be diagnosed. The one that always gets me is when this mother said, I wish my son would have read this before he killed himself. Yeah. And that's when I knew that food is very important to me. It will never, ever not be important to me, but I had to do something else. I put my cookbook aside that I was working on, went to my agent and said, I'm writing a book about being queer, crazy, and cooking crudités. I have to do that. And so the book is called, it's the same publisher actually with Kat. Mm-hmm. It's called Notes on a Banana, a memoir of food, love, and manic depression. And by having broken that out, I am now so much more authentically myself that I can write about being crazy, I can write about being queer, and I can write about the fabulous, fabulous souffles that I have done and made. And that's more me and more authentic than anything. So that was it for me. And that's why I think being in that box is not the right thing, because that box isn't you. Mm-hmm. You're bigger than the box.
If we're not all pre-ordering Queer Crazy Crudité, you know, cookbooks.
And no one can take that because that's
no.
That is
right now. That is
trademarked
right now. This is being recorded. All right, so that gets us to the heart of this session, which is the benefit of breaking free with your personal brand. And, you know, I want to start with Annie because she did something that's is really gutsy. So, Annie, why don't you tell us what you did?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, a lot of you may have known me in the past as PhD in parenting. I had the blog phdinparenting.com and the same sort of Twitter handle, Facebook, that type of thing. And I had been writing there for 7 years. And at the start, I absolutely loved it. I saw it as a space where I could go and just, you know, record my thoughts about parenting, things I'd been researching, things I'd been thinking about, stories about raising my children. And I had so much to say and so much to write. And over time, I just found that I was just not passionate about writing about parenting anymore. I'd gotten to a point where I really felt like the parenting journey that I was in was more of a relationship with my children rather than something that I really wanted to be sharing with the rest of the world. My kids are 10 and 8 now, and it just felt like, you know, those were our stories. That was our relationship, and it wasn't the same as when you're writing about co-sleeping or breastfeeding or, you know, things along those lines that are so universal to so many parents. And so I kind of felt like I'd said everything that I wanted to say on parenting. I'd run out of ideas. I would try, and then I just wasn't into it anymore. So, you know, I had then the opportunity at that point I could just leave altogether. I could, you know, rebrand as something else, just change my Twitter handle, change the name of my Facebook page, and that type of thing. Or I could start fresh. And
yep. Just to interrupt you, can you give them a sense of the scope of your audience that you were
absolutely.
You had there?
So on PhD in parenting, I was getting around 100,000 to 200,000 page views a month, 80,000 Twitter followers, 45,000 Facebook fans, and so that was a lot to consider giving up. But with that came a lot of baggage as well. So I had every single day in my inbox, in my Twitter replies, I had people asking me to do things for them. So it would be, you know, can you retweet my Kickstarter? Can you write about this new toy that we have out for kids? Can you do a review of our diapers? Can you do a sponsored post on this? Can you put an ad in here? And so much of it was just not at all the type of thing that I wanted to do. And every time I picked up my phone and I looked at it, there'd be like 5 more emails from people asking something from me. And I just wasn't getting what I wanted to get out of that experience, and I just had people asking me for stuff all the time. And it wasn't huge opportunities. It wasn't like, oh, we'd like to, you know, pay you $2,000 to do such and such. It was, no, can you please write about my thing for free, or, you know, in exchange for a box of free diapers or whatever it is, right? So I, in the end, made the hard decision. I decided that I was just going to abandon my old social media presence. It's still up there. My blog is up there. I've said I'm going to keep it up as long as the Amazon associates still keeps paying the hosting fees. I started fresh. So I started Ethical Thinker from scratch. Wrote a blog post about it on my new blog about abandoning the old one and starting over. And the interesting thing that I found was that when I look at the numbers, not from a followers and fans perspective, but more from an engagement perspective, I was getting almost as much engagement with 225 followers on my new Twitter account a few months ago as I was from, you know, a few months before that with my 80,000 followers on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Because the people who were truly engaged with me and interested in what it is that I had to say, they were the ones who were engaging me before and who are still engaging me now. The rest of it was just a whole bunch of people who were following me and hoping to get something from me.
Oh my God, you should be a pastor. I mean, hallelujah. I mean, it's like, I feel like I'm in the choir. I mean, that is like so exactly right on. It's just phenomenal what you just said. I'm sorry. Phenomenal. Ooh, getting so excited.
Any other stories about, you know, that freeing moment where you sort of realized that even taking a risk was the right thing to do?
I mean, I've been blogging for 10 years, and so it's like,
I was naturally going to evolve. And I started my blog when I was 21, so it's like, you know, if I was still writing about being drunk in Georgetown 10 years later, like, people would be concerned, and this would be a giant intervention. So I feel like it's a very natural thing to kind of start to move out of that box, because you're always, in life, you're just always going through transitions, and you're going through new iterations of yourself, and so it isn't possible to, I don't think it's possible to remain stagnant. I don't think it's possible for, if you're writing publicly, for your writing to remain stagnant, because you're going to have new things that you're thinking about and new experiences. And so it's being able to kind of roll with that. And even if you are in a specific, like if you are, you know, a parent blogger or a cooking blogger, being able to be like, look, this is what I am super interested in parenting and cooking, but I also have other interests. I mean, everyone should be, or I hope everybody is, a well-rounded person. And I think that's what's key here, is being able to kind of tap into everything that you're really interested in while remaining authentic.
Yeah, and I'll note also that I had always been a part of much bigger corporations, and I found my identity through that a lot. I was Kat from AOL, Kat from CNN, and I was terrified that if I walked off to a smaller brand or did something that was just mine, like my book, that I would lose all relevance, that I would lose credibility, that I would lose any sort of foothold in the world. And when I was deciding to leave CNN, I expressed this to various friends, to colleagues and things, saying like, you know, I have one of the biggest platforms in the world. How do I contemplate stepping away from that? And I heard over and over again, you carry your credibility with you. And that was really, really strong to me, and was also what really propelled me to write the book. I had always been able to hide behind a big company before, like, and just fall into the cracks of whatever that, you know, giant media corporation was. And, you know, writing this book, I'm standing out there, you know, it's just me. I have nothing to hide behind, and that's absolutely terrifying, which is why I completely needed to do it, because I needed something that was mine, that I owned, that was, granted, it belongs to HarperCollins, but you know, it'll have my name on it. And that was a terrifying leap to make, but one that I had to, in order to not feel like I'd given up on myself, and to really be a statement to myself, like, I believe in what I am doing, and I have this crazy suspicion that other people will too.
So, Heather, you raise a really great point. We're all evolving as we blog, hopefully, over the years. There's a lot of things happening in the world that we may want to, you know, comment on. But if you guys were at the earlier session on branding for creatives, there was some talk about, you know, if I'm a design blogger, I'm not sure I want to talk about race. Or if I'm a feminist blogger, I don't want to talk about fashion. And Irwin Liu, who was on the earlier panel and is a food blogger but is an Asian gay man in San Francisco, talked about how he was able to blog about the Supreme Court marriage equality decision by using a chocolate chip cookie analogy. So he brought it back to the cooking blog. And I wanted you guys to address that. What if I'm somebody who doesn't write about politics, but I've got something I want to, you know, I feel very moved by a cause or an issue? How do you fold that into your writing without losing that that strong, identifiable personal brand?
I think for me, it's about speed. I think you have to go slowly. I think your audience, if you just all of a sudden do something entirely different, they are going to go, "What? Am I reading the right blog?" But if you slowly introduce something, over time, it will be so interwoven into what you do. It'll be part of the tapestry of who you are and the stories that you tell. It won't seem odd or different when it pops up. That's just my particular belief. Some people do love that sort of just jam it right down, just right there, just complete difference, just one to the other juxtaposition to really wake people up. And that's another way of going too. For me, that doesn't work. An interesting thing about Irwin, I bumped into him on the way out. His husband, I guess, broke his ankle while he was here yesterday. And he said when he talked about that, about writing about the Supreme Court, five people got up and left. They don't want to hear it. That's fine. I kind of think of my readership and the people that who follow me and fans and everything, it's kind of a circle. And that's sort of what I write about. And as I move around in my life, some people are going to leave and some people are going to be introduced into mm-hmm. that circle. And there are going to be some people who want to know about crazy and want to know about queer and want to know about crudité, and there are people who won't, and I will lose them, and that's okay. Because I'd rather lose. I think what you said was so amazing, Annie. It's about engagement, it's not about numbers. Mm-hmm. I would rather have fewer people who really are interested in what I want to talk about and what I have to talk about than have great, great, incredible numbers about people who are just, they're dead on the other end.
I was just going to add, I think that if there's something that you're scared to say or scared to write about, then your readers that are interested in the topic that you're writing about are probably also scared. And so mm-hmm. I think it makes it that much more important to do it. You know, I'm a white mom raising white kids, and on my old parenting blog, I did write some blog posts sometimes talking about how do I speak to my kids about race and about racism or about LGBT issues and things along those lines, because those are things that sometimes, if that's not my day-to-day, it is scary to figure out how do I explain that to my child. I'm not a black mom speaking to her black son about the way that black men are treated in America. I'm a white mom speaking to her white son about it. And so I think that me muddling through that and figuring out how I'm going to have those conversations with my son and then writing about that on my blog is something that's going to be a resource and is going to help other people as well. But I think also if you're scared to write about it, another opportunity is to amplify someone else's voice. And that's something that I like to do a lot. If there's something that I'm not a particular expert on, or it's not my issue specifically, then find someone whose issue that is. Find someone who writes about it eloquently. Find someone who has a strong voice and share their voice on your blog. Not by stealing their content, obviously, but, take an excerpt. Mm-hmm. Quote it, link people off to their blog, send someone over to someone else who is an expert on that topic, and use your platform as an opportunity to amplify those issues.
And to me, that's one of the greatest things about Blogger. This is my fourth year, and this is the place where I hear voices from people who are very different from me, and that's how I get to know those stories. So we're in the right place for it. Why don't we take a couple of audience questions, and I would just ask that you wait till the mic wrangler comes. She's on her way, so raise your hand. Say your name and your blog before you ask your question, because we're all here to meet each other. And if you're directing it to someone specific, just say who that is. So first question over here in the front row.
Hi, my name is Dia. My website is called allthethingsido.com. I actually had a question, I think kind of really directed at David, about the writing about different topics, because it's called allthethingsido.com, so I cover a lot, and it's kind of hard when you're trying to build your audience and like build your brand and who you are, what you want to talk about. And because I'm that type of person who I'm all over the place, like, and I think it's a good thing, but you know, I want to talk about like going to the doctor to get birth control. I want to talk about traveling to New York by myself. I want to talk about making pizza like from scratch. I want to talk about all those things, and I just don't know if I'm trying to cover too much. I'm not at the point where I'm like, I have to do a blog on every topic once a week. It's not like that, but I just don't know if I'm too, how do you know where that line is?
All right, I haven't seen your blog, so I can't speak to your blog, but I think what you need to do, especially when you're starting out or been doing it for a couple of years and you're itching, because I remember when I first started, I worked at home. It was in advertising, so I'd work like 3 hours a day in advertising and make $1 million, had the rest of my day to work on my blog. I would wake up, and then 2009 hit, and I mean 2001 hit, and then I was in poverty. But I would wake up so excited. I mean, literally, I just couldn't wait, work 10, 12, 14 hours a day on food. Then I got a little crazy. I wanted to do more. I think you have to find out, pick three or four things that you are that are the top of your list, and write everything that you love down, and then keep on shuffling the numbers until you see what really floats to the very, very top. Not lop it off at four, let's say. I'm just giving you a random number. Write about those until you really get established as someone as an expert on women's issues, an expert on being 22. I don't know how old you are. Whatever those things are. So you're known for that. And then you can start going other places. But you can be too frazzled. You can be too dispersed in your topics. And then therefore, you're then speaking to no one because you're trying to speak to everyone. And so I think that, you still need to know, there still has to be some sort of at least soft edges around what you talk about. Does that make sense?
No, it does. It does. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'll say also, I gave a talk once called Telling Little Stories Making People Care. Because, you know, most of us are writing about topics from our own particular lens. And I found in my own reading online, I get invested in a person rather than a topic. Mm-hmm. And part of the art of the people who I really like to read is that they leave space for the reader in there. It's not just, I did this. It's come along on this journey with me to this thing that I did. And I think so long as you can reflect your own passion and enthusiasm about that, people will root for you. And they're going to want to see the world through your particular lens. And I think just a big part of that is having conversations with your readers, whether it's in comments or Twitter or something like that, and just ask them back, I did this thing, what did you do with your day? And I know that sounds like such a simple little thing, but people really just want to be seen. You know, I always think of this like my dogs. I live with a bunch of dogs. Like, they always come over to me, and they'll stare at me. And I'll think, you just want me to say, you're okay. And I think all of us are like that. We just want somebody to see us and say, you're okay. So I think if you have that relationship and really foster that with your readers, they're going to come with you to the beach. They're going to come with you shopping. They're mm-hmm. going to come with you cooking, wherever you go, just because they like spending time with you.
Mm-hmm. And just to round out what I was going to say, look at what you have in common with all of your different posts. Let's say it's a humor point of view. It's very humorous in what you're saying. Or it's kind of, let's just use humor, because I use humor a lot. Maybe what you really are is a humor writer that writes about very different things. And that's fine, but that's your topic, that's your expertise, that's what you're known as. David Sedaris could write about the phone book, and we all would buy the book and spend $50 to watch the son of a bitch read it in Barnes & Noble.
And have him sign it.
And have him sign it. Uh-huh. And the thing is, it's because of what he does, which is the humor that he brings to it. He's a humor writer. And that's maybe you need to see with the overarching thing of all the different small things you do.
All right, next question.
Hi, everyone. My name is Patrice Perkins, and my blog is creativegeniussociety.com. I blog on all things legal, life, and business for creative entrepreneurs. My question is, as a service provider, I'm an attorney for creative entrepreneurs. I struggle with finding the balance between maintaining the face of my firm with my personal brand as is conveyed on the blog. For instance, I love to talk about my struggles as a rising entrepreneur, and I think it's important for other creative entrepreneurs as well. But I'm not certain if that would kind of, hinder someone from hiring me because I'm sharing too much of that. I'm not as concerned about it with my existing clients because they have experienced me already. They know the quality of the work, but it's a constant struggle with how much do I share and not scare potential legal clients away.
Thank you for asking that, because that's the persona question that I promised we would ask, which is, you know, if you've got, and I'm going to recap or rephrase it a little bit, make sure I've got it right, but, you know, you're writing about the creative entrepreneur life, but there may be other things you want to write about. You know, how do you make sure that all these divergent or different parts of your personality and your interests work together? And what's interesting is that we've got some panelists who merge those, and then we have someone who keeps them very, very separate. So let's start with Heather.
I was a lobbyist. I mean, I live in D.C. and I work in politics, and there is just no other place where people are like, you can't be yourself. Meanwhile, I'm like, yes, I can, and I did. I also, when I started blogging, it wasn't as ubiquitous as it is now, and Facebook and Twitter wasn't a thing. Facebook had just started, but I was always super honest about myself and what I was doing. And at some point, I learned to tone it down, but it was something I eventually kind of just had to go through and be like, okay, what am I not going to share? Am I going to talk about drinking again? I used to talk about drinking all the time. It was bad. Because I was 21. And I was like, ooh, it's brand new. vodka. And now I'm like, all right, I don't have to write about that. But I think it's all about being yourself, and you'd rather be able to shape your own narrative and in talking about yourself and what you're interested in and your personality, rather than having people like pick and choose what they learn about you, or you pick and, you know, or based on what they hear about you. So if you are writing about yourself and talk and being yourself, that's a lot easier, because then you can say, yes, I am interested in these things. Yes, I also do this. I mean, I remember when I first started speaking at blog conferences, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so weird. And then it became just a completely normal thing. And, you know, I got hired because of it. I got different opportunities because of it. And I feel like if you are very authentic, which, you know, that word gets thrown around a lot, but it's true, if you're very authentic with who you are, that the opportunities will follow and people will appreciate that about you, rather than it being some, you know, some super crazy secret. I feel like you can be yourself while also being a professional. I mean, like I said, I work in politics and I have multiple tattoos that I like to talk about. And, you know, people just kind of, you know, senators roll with it.
I'm somebody who definitely operates in a few different arenas, and I think, you know, I'm wearing a necklace right here that says anxious, so it's not like I hide it all that much. But you can have your credibility in a few different places. Yes, I write very much from a very, very personal place about things through the lens of, you know, a mentally ill person, or, you know, somebody who maybe looks at the world in a different kind of way. I'm also the same person who, when I worked at CNN, had, you know, people like Brian Scott, who was sitting there writing about his relationship with Monsanto and farmers coming in and, you know, talking about the farm bill. And I what it took was writing in first person for some, and then you know, writing almost with a different voice or even no voice on other things. I can write news copy where you would have absolutely no idea that I wrote it, and can write very straightforward cooking stories and food culture stories and stuff. And people might be surprised that the same person who wrote that wrote this essay about, you know, a particular thing. I think you just have to be sort of nimble. Sometimes they're not going to cross over, and that is completely okay when I'm, you know, writing about, you know, farm stuff, or having, you know, great people like those wonderful two ag bloggers right there, you know, in the conversation. I'm not important in that conversation. Like, yes, I'm sharing with Spotlight and sharing, you know, the audience that I have, but there's a generosity to it where you're leaving yourself out of it and just sharing the knowledge that you have rather than yourself. And there's a way to do it.
Annie, I want to get your take on this, because you've got kind of...
Yeah, so I'm actually very, very persona-based in terms of what it is that I do online, because I, you know, I have a day job that's very different from what I do in the blogging world, and so I actually don't, in terms of the blogging stuff that I do, I don't use my real name anywhere. And that's because, in terms of my day job, I just don't do a lot of writing online with regards to what it is in my day job, and I didn't want a prospective client to go and Google my name and find 100 posts on breastfeeding before they found anything about the consulting work that I do every single day. And it's not that I want to hide the fact that I've written about breastfeeding. It's just more of a search engine optimization exercise. I want them to type in my name and come to my website that talks about my professional consulting business without me having to write about that every single day to make that come up to the top. So, yeah, so I do have different personas online. But in terms of your particular question, I'm actually going to give a shout out to my personal trainer. Her name is Elsbeth Vino. Her website is Custom Strength. She's also Custom Strength on Twitter. And her blog, I think, is a fantastic example of what it is that you were just asking about. She writes about training with her clients. She does videos on specific exercises and so on. But she'll also write about issues that are more personal or experiments that she's doing. Like, she for a while went on what she called a pizza and beer diet. And she wanted to see whether she could eat pizza and beer 5 times a week and still be healthy, because she just loved pizza and beer. And so that was something where it was more of her personal journey, but it was related to what she does, because she does have clients asking her all the time, well, how can I still eat the things that I love and still be in fantastic shape? So Custom Strength, check her out, and it might give you some good ideas in terms of how to balance those things.
Does that answer your question? Okay, we'll take one more quick question, and then we're going to talk about process. But I just want to weigh in here, too, because I want to talk about myself for a minute. But I do, like Annie, my day job is doing consulting for digital publishers, but I was not smart enough to ever hide my name from my blog. I just put it right out there because who was ever going to read it anyway? And I write these very irreverent posts about going to see concerts and being the oldest person in the audience. And my concert reviews always include an age humiliation factor, like whether or not the bouncer carded me, because I feel like that's just good manners. I know, I don't. But I have recently, I've had a few clients who say on a conference call, oh, I found your blog. And I'm like, oh my God, like, oh. And what's happened, instead of it being a horrible thing that they have seen the post I wrote about the time the bat got in my office or whatever, everybody's a musician. So I end up, all these clients of mine are like, you know, I play the viola. And I have found these really cool connections that my boss and my manager don't have with the client that I do, because music's so universal. I mean, I'm writing about a pretty universal topic, but you know, I think sometimes making yourself vulnerable and sharing that bit of personality, you know, we don't want to work with robots, you know? You want to know who the people are who you work with. So far it's paid off. I'll let you know, but David.
This is kind of maybe devil's advocate. I think you have to be careful, depending upon what you do. If you're a doctor or you're an attorney, okay, you know, you have to ask yourself, what is it that you would not want to have in your personal attorney? What kind of quality? For instance, I know, having written about mental illness, bipolar, people knowing that I have rages at times, I'm depressed, don't really want to get out of bed, can barely function at different times, and then sometimes I'm fabulous and very, very creative, I probably have lost the chance to be hired by a company. Of course, there are laws in place that would, you know, stop that. But there you can also find other reasons why not to hire me. You have to ask yourself, is that going to affect something? So the issues you're talking about, I think, are very well within the ability to talk. But if you want to start talking about other things that maybe someone would go, I don't want my lawyer to be that. I don't want to know that about my lawyer. Then I think that's where you have to go, okay, then maybe I need to go under a pseudonym. Or maybe I have to do something different elsewhere this way so I can still express myself. For me, I'm self-employed. I make all of my money and my living through what I do online. So there's just no going back. I mean, it's like, remember that Chinese finger thing? I'm in and I can't get out. You know, I just can't get out now. I'm crazy. People know it. And that's it. It's just that simple.
Thanks, David. I appreciate you adding that. All right, so we have a question over here. Go ahead.
So my name is Amy Juicebox. I write for a website called nowawordortwo.com. Amy Juicebox is not my real name, and so I'm really glad that you brought up writing from a different persona. And I'm struggling right now with trying to take my blog to the next level, and when I'm at a place like Blogger or other blog conferences, I have to introduce myself by my government name, but tell people, but I don't write under my government name. So how do you manage the two? Because I have a full-time job that has nothing to do with Blogger. I don't want my employers to know that I write about, you know, what I write about. And it's nothing that, again, it's not a shame factor. It's just really, I want my potential future wedding clients and my employers to see, you know, me has one thing, but I want to still be able to build my brand. And if I have to go on television, do I say to the media, oh, I'm Amy Juicebox, or do I have to give them my government name? So I'm struggling with that.
It is really, really complicated, and it's something that has been very complicated for me. And it, not so much now with my smaller blog, but when I had the bigger one, I was often, like, I would be the person that the media would want to have come and comment on something related to parenting and feminism, for example, because that was a big thing that I did. And I did more American media than I did Canadian media, even though I'm in Canada, because I felt like I could give a pseudonym to the New York Times and that would be fine and no one was going to call me on it. But I never did local media because I thought, even going on the radio and I give a pseudonym, people are going to recognize my voice. And so I just flat out, I said, you know what, I'm sorry. If you don't need to use my name, then I will come on and I'll do it, but otherwise, no. And so that meant that, like, the CBC, the big public broadcaster in Canada, they asked me, like, for almost every single show that they had, and I always gave them the same answer, that you cannot use my real name. And their answer back was, well, then I'm sorry, but we can't have you on. And that was just something that I had to accept. So I had to accept that there would be certain opportunities that I was turning down because I was protecting my name, and that was a decision that I'd made. Okay. Hey.
Okay, so I want to leave some time at the end for questions, but before we get to that, let's talk about process and how you, the actual nuts and bolts of defining the blog. And I think what could be particularly interesting is talking about how you do that in an offline fashion as well as an online fashion. Mm-hmm. So who wants to take that? Come on. All right, Heather, I'm making eye contact with you.
Wait, so then, wait, just
so
repeat the
how,
question,
like, the process of defining your brand, how did you sort of do that? Did you? And one thing I have not heard anyone talk about is whether you had friends who were sounding boards. Were you? I mean, did you go to them and say, "I think this is what I do"? Do you think that's what I do? Well, you talked about that a little bit with your Facebook, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that was just a couple of months ago. But for me, it was like I said, it was a natural evolution of, okay, so this is what I'm interested in now, and so what is my ultimate goal as a blogger? And do I want to stay a blogger, or do I want to be a writer in terms of, do I want to write for larger publications, or do I want to write in print? And I had to figure out what I wanted to do. Did I want to be the type of person who did a lot of sponsored posts on my blog, or did I want to write for Vanity Fair? And I knew that I wanted to be an essayist is what I would like to eventually do. And so once there were a couple things happened, and I started, I got a few interesting followers, and one of the followers happened to be an editor at The Guardian. And at some point I was like, there had been so many instances in terms of, race issues happening, as they've been happening repeatedly. And I said, all right, I'll write for you. And she said, awesome. And so I wrote for The Guardian. And then I wrote for The Guardian again. And then I wrote for The Guardian again. I've written for The Guardian 4 times. Essentially, I do it like once a month. And now, instead of being known as Heather Barmore, the blogger, I've been able to be, Heather Barmore, the writer, and I've written essays and longer pieces at several other outlets once, because I finally realized what I wanted to do, and I knew, finally had that end goal in sight, and it gave me a better appreciation for my writing. Now I am able to, kind of go outside of my blog. So it's not so much me writing very personal stories on my personal blog, it's me being able to write essays on, on much larger publications, which is also really nice because I don't have a huge number of followers on my personal blog, but, The Guardian has several million. So that part is pretty nice, and then I can just leave them there, and then I just go back to, living my lovely life in D.C. with my cat.
Kat, I think you had some similar advice about just writing, just...
Yeah, you just have to do the work. You really just, when I was writing this book, I had absolutely no idea how to tackle such a thing and how to get out of my own way, because Twitter is so great, and Instagram and Facebook and all of those things. And oh my gosh, maybe in the last 30 seconds, somebody's put up something new. And it can be this, it's a really great, great thing for personal branding, because you control that and you get to put your avatar out into the world. But when I was, writing this book and, at CNN full time and then at a tasting table, I had to just remove myself from the equation for a while, and I wrote probably the last third of my manuscript longhand. I got a separate writing space from my house, just down by the lovely Gowanus Canal, and made sure not to get the password for the Wi-Fi. And either would sit there and use a computer that wasn't hooked up to the internet, or just write it. I bought myself a special pen and a long, reporter style notebook, and just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote, and had a conversation with my husband ahead of time at the beginning of the process, saying, like, look. I'm going to be a terrible wife for a little while, and we, if you need me, if you feel like I'm not present enough for you, you can always pull me back in, call me on it, and we can have dinner, and we can sit down and talk, but I have to give my life over to this for a little while, and I had to give up some of my life for a while, and just sat and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And the other bit that I would say here, and this sounds so superficial and silly, but it
it's been a thing. Somebody told me once, he said, do you have an iconic sketch of yourself? And I was thinking, who the hell has that? And that is actually like my CNN headshot that when I started my job at Tasting Table, they turned that into a drawing, and I've had people come up and say, like, I recognize you from the drawing, and think, so, you know, it sounds like such a silly, narcissistic thing to have, but if you have, you know, a point of difference about you that can be emphasized in a drawing like that, it's worth it to have something like that.
And when you have that, this is just, I think probably you guys see this, but use that drawing for your Twitter, for your Facebook, mm-hmm. So that people will know when they see your avatar, wherever it is, that that's you. That's a really easy thing you can do, you know, when you leave today to make sure that your brand is consistent across all the platforms on which you may be active.
Oh, and also try to, like, have the same username everywhere. So I, like...
Kat, do you not have the same username?
Oh my God, I'm anal retentive. I'm like, everybody's like, well, where are you? What are you on Instagram, Heather Barmore? What are you on Pinterest, Heather Barmore? What are you on Twitter, mm-hmm. Heather Barmore? Mm-hmm. And that photo is my photo everywhere. And then even on Facebook and on Twitter, I have the same cover photo from, like, it's an old photo. But, like, make sure you do that because that's also part of the brand. Like, we're talking a lot about be authentic, but, like, the basic parts of the branding process are, like, continuity.
Yeah. Right. And even if there are platforms that you're not active on, mm-hmm. so I've got, you know, I have it, I'm on Pinterest just so nobody else will take my face shape on Pinterest. Don't go look at my boards. There's nothing to see there. But, you know, it's, you know, as the new platforms come up, just grab it so nobody else can.
And as I said, that was part of my, when I was searching for my new URL for my new blog, that was part of my process, was it wasn't just looking at, is that URL available, but is also the Twitter handle and the Facebook page and the Pinterest and the, you know, all that stuff available as well.
All right, I think we have time for one more question for me and then you guys. But if you, in developing your personal brand, what do you wish you'd known then that you know now?
I can't say anything because I started in 1999. Most of you weren't born, and most of you didn't have blogs because blogs didn't even exist in 1999. So I was just winging it. I was doing what felt right and what felt good, and that is what my brand ended up being. You asked me what the last of the three things. I didn't have the third one. Third one is heartfelt. I think that what I do is heartfelt. And so I don't really regret anything because it just developed so naturally and so organically for me that it's not calculated. I get into trouble when I try to calculate now. When I see that Food 52 does this and Steamy Kitchen does this and Pioneer Woman does that, then I go, I'm going to do the Steamy Pioneer 52. And I just suck at it because it's not me. Mm-hmm. I can't do that.
Wrestling Federation move, the Steamy Pile Driver 52.
So, you know, for me, it's no, I'm happy with the way it happened.
Yeah, I waited around to be given permission to be called a writer. And I could have given myself that permission a very long time ago. And I get hung up on titles. I get hung up on credentials and all that. And my background, it was in fine art. My master's degree is in metalsmithing. And I kept, you know, and I got into the design and editorial world on the visual side. And I kept thinking, oh, these are the real writers. I should have gone to school for that. I should have... you know, done all of that, and I was thinking at age 25 or something like that, like, well, you know, I did the wrong thing, so I guess I'm stuck in this particular path. But I always found myself taking jobs where I was doing the art direction and I was doing all these things, but I would sneak in some writing somehow, like, you know, I can do restaurant reviews or, you know, music or whatever it was, and I was doing it around the edges, and it wasn't until a time when I was trying to figure out what my next move was that I put writer on my taxes, and I put writer on my business card, and then you're just a writer. I wish I had done that a long, 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 long time before I did, and also value the fact that I had stories to tell, and maybe somebody wanted to listen, and that maybe they would make somebody else feel seen and heard.
For me, I feel like this sounds, you know, cheesy, but it's true. Is that, you know, if you are yourself and you're telling your stories from your perspective about whatever is going on in the world, then or whatever story that you want to tell. It's just, you know, tell your stories, be yourself, and I feel like the money and the opportunities will follow. And, I mean, it takes a minute. It's not like, you know, it's instantaneous, but I found that, you know, being very honest with my thoughts, especially on current events and on politics, has given me far more opportunities and better opportunities than when I was being a faux mommy blogger. So, I mean, that's my one suggestion.
I would say that, I mean, the biggest thing that I learned was that you don't necessarily need to respond to everybody, and you don't mm-hmm. need to respond to or, you know, do what other people expect you to do or expect you to be. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, initially I really thought that if someone emailed me, I needed to respond back. And if someone asked me to review their product, well, then that was really really flattering, and I should probably really consider doing that. But eventually what I did was I wrote on my blog a page on sort of, you know, working with me, and I outlined this is the type of thing that I do, this is the type of thing that I do not do, and I was like, you know what, it's out there, I don't have to respond now, I can ignore all of those mm-hmm. emails that are coming into my inbox. If people are really that interested in knowing whether I'm going to review their diapers, then they should go to my website and check out what my policies are. So I stopped responding, I stopped following back everyone, because I was flattered, I only followed back if I was interested in what they had to say as well. So, yeah.
Do you ever, I sometimes get those PR pitches where they say, hey, we looked at your blog and we'd yeah. love for you to write about our, you know, diapers. Mm-hmm. And I always write back and say, show me the part of my blog where you saw that I was somebody who would write, and I don't ever hear from them again.
Seriously, it's like baby thermometers. Where did you see me with a baby?
I know you're a...
Maybe you have a thing for thermometers.
I mean,
you know?
Like, no, I don't want it. No, thank you.
And but you're right. I shouldn't even be writing them back. It's just I get really mad.
Yeah. It depends on my mood, and that's the thing. Sometimes they are so egregious, the things that people write and ask, and it's so ridiculous that I do write back with a snarky reply, because I think, you know, somewhere along the line they have to learn that lesson, but mm-hmm. most of the time it's just ignore, ignore, ignore.
Yeah. All right, so time for a few more questions. Right up here in front here. I got this one.
Hi, I'm Natalie Callback, and I'm a mixed media artist. My blog is nataliestudio.com, and I, although I'm an artist, I'm also a crafter, and my blog has evolved from like crafting tutorials to now more about my life as an artist. But I have a lot of followers that are crafters and not necessarily sometimes in tune with my kind of lifestyle. So you have said a lot about like authenticity, which I really try to do more and more. But of course, there are people that are not very happy about it. Mm-hmm. So how do you react when people are like, for example, like I'm going to a museum and I take a picture of a painting with breasts. Oh my God, that's terrible. You put it on your blog and there will be like comments like, why didn't you warn me? My kids saw it. I mean, like, I'm not kidding you. It's, like, actually pretty ridiculous. But anyway, like, I'm sure about what you said, what you write about, you had, like, even more insane responses on comments. So do you ignore those people? Do you delete it? Do you engage with them? Do you have other people engage with them? That's pretty much the question.
You're speaking to me?
All of you.
You know, it's interesting. I've had one negative response in all the years about me being gay. And it came from a person who, it was a comment, and it was like, let's say it was, you know, cat@wewelcomealltoourchurch.com. Uh-huh. I'm not lying. It was like one of those very inclusive, very ecumenical. Uh-huh. And I'm like, fuck you. But... my policy personally is I do answer everyone. We have a policy at my site, on my blog, which is no comment left unanswered. We always answer every single comment. It doesn't mean that we answer it online. If there's a real hate mail that comes in, I will address once at least with that person. I'm so sorry that you found the content offensive. It's a pluralistic society. You know, there are a lot of other places that you can go to find the stuff that you'd like.
Yeah.
Let it go. If they like something, fine. If they have a question about it, sometimes I'll put it on the site because I think it opens up for good conversation. Mm-hmm. But we have a comment policy which says my site is not a democracy, it's an autocracy. And if you don't behave, I'm not saying it this way, but if you don't behave, you're not going to be on it. Mm-hmm. But every comment is answered, because I feel, you know, I feel that I owe it. If I'm a public person, I feel I owe that. I'm asking for comments by saying comments. So I feel that I owe it to that person for at least one. If they want to engage and be totally wacko, and I know what wacko is, I know clinically what wacko is. If they're going to be like wacko, wacko, then I'm just not interested, and then I shut it down. Mm-hmm. That's me. I what? It depends what it is. If someone's saying you're a fucking queer, you goddamn faggot, then yeah, I will forgive me. I will do that, mm-hmm. you know, and then I'll write that person personally, and that never shows on the site. It's my site. It's not theirs. And if they start saying, no, this is, you know, there's no freedom of the press over at Leeds Culinary on the David blog, and I'm like, you're goddamn right there's not. Because, you know, when you have a blog and you want to say something and delete it, you can. So that's my policy.
People think that the First Amendment extends to all things, and it's like, that's not how that works. And my response is, like, whenever somebody's, like, usually it's on, like, Facebook or Twitter, if somebody's an asshole, I'm always like, ha ha, bye. And that's the end of that conversation. I just say bye.
I'll always allow any type of comment as long as it's respectful. So I don't allow people to disrespect me or disrespect mm-hmm. anyone else. I don't allow hate speech. I don't allow, you know, racism, anti-gay, anything like that on my site. But if someone just says, you know, something like, you know, one that came up a lot was, well, I don't understand why women would want to breastfeed in public and things like that on my old one. I'm happy. I'll sit down there. I will explain to them why that's okay, and I'll do so politely. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity for other people to learn from that type of a dialogue. So I think with something like the painting with breasts on it, I would explain why that's okay.
There's
but
a thing
as long
called
as they were
women.
Respectful.
They yeah. have breasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Women have boobs.
Yeah. All right, I think we have time only for one more question, because after that we got to get ready for voting. So is there someone in the back of the room? I see somebody over here. And thanks for all these great questions, you guys.
Thank you so much. Hello, my name is Brittany Lowe. My blog is brittanylowe.com. I also have a beauty service company called Beautini. And I started blogging because through the clients we were working with, they kept on asking different beauty questions, and our main target are brides. So my main question for you is, I think, Heather, you touched upon this about wanting to become a mommy blogger but without having children.
Yeah.
Can I be writing about, like, bridal things and about brides when I'm not married?
Yeah.
And, like, I can only, because the thing is, I want to relate to the clients we're working with
yeah.
and be able to provide expertise. But do you think people could really relate to me when I'm not married? Like, I'm, does that make sense?
I mean, people know what you aren't. So, I mean, especially when you're, like, for me, when it's, like, I feel like there's a difference between talking about, like, bridal stuff, even though you're not a bride, and talking about parenting stuff when you're not a parent, because parents are like, what? You don't know anything. You don't know love. You've never been tired. No, that, like, because
have people actually said that to you?
Oh, my God, all the time. Are you kidding me? All the time. You don't know anything about being, you know, you think you know everything about being a parent. You're going to become one, and meh, and they will, no, don't deal with parents. Parents are crazy in a very good way.
That comment would get deleted.
I mean, in a good way. That said, so I think that there's a difference. Like, you can talk about bridal stuff. You can talk about, like, cakes, and because you're talking about in general, and, like, talk about wedding stuff, because people will want to find that kind of information because it doesn't feel as personal. Because parenting is such a personal thing that they're all like, what?
Yeah, people are looking for a taste level
with
that. I mean, I used to run the wedding section at CNN, and I had my wedding in 83 days. And, you know, and it was, you know, they wore a crazy dress and stuff, but I was still writing and editing and finding articles that were all about, you know, big, beautiful, white, puffy dress mm-hmm. things. And, you know, I think people trusted my taste in the matter because they knew that I knew about other things. And, again, people just like things sort of, like, curated down and collected mm-hmm. for them. So I think so long as you can show people that you have an eye and can think about things in these thoughtful way. And, you know, we've all been to a million weddings. Before I got married, I'd been to a million weddings. I had some thoughts on weddings.
Yes.
And, you know, and so I think that's fine. And if you have spent that much time researching the subject, you are an expert. And this also gets back to you get to decide when you're an expert on something.
People will want to, you know, hear more about things that are beautifully curated. And as a wedding guest, like, what works well and what doesn't. I mean, nobody wants to hear from a non-parent what works well with their kids.
But the other thing I would say, too, is that, you know, that is definitely all true, but the other thing that you can do as well to give some more authenticity to it is to bring in some bride stories. So if there are brides that you've worked with and something worked really well for them and they're willing to have you share the process that you used for working with them and what worked really well, then I think that gives it some additional credibility as well.
And then the only thing I'll add is, you know, a generalist at a newspaper writes about many, many, many things. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I would caution you on is to suddenly start throwing yourself in the eye about you're the one who is doing all of this stuff and the wedding and the this, because you're not. So therefore, if you're writing about this is your experience of what's out there and what's beautiful and the curation and all of that, that's perfectly fine, because then I'll trust you as an expert. Martha Stewart still writes about wedding, and you know that woman ain't getting married anytime soon, right? Yeah. So she's still writing about it. You can too, but she's not writing about it from a personal point of view of her wedding. That's
all right, everyone. Thank you so much.
I have one thing to say. Just one last thing. Some people have written me saying, I'd like to get together with you and talk to you. Can you spend some time? And I have written some of you back. Some of you I haven't written back. So from now until 4:30, I'm going to be around in this hallway. If anybody wants to stop by and talk to me, chat, ask me questions, I'm there. If not, I will be reading, unfortunately, this. But I will be out there.
Save him from Go Set a Watchman. Go ask him some questions. All right, thanks, everyone. And thanks so much to our panelists. Great job, you guys.
Thank you for listening to this BlogHer 15 audio session presented by She Knows Media. For more information, please visit blogher.com.